This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support this free service by September 5th and you could win a Mini Cooper S convertible. Go to KCRW.com for details.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato. Mother Nature and Human Nature, Hurricane Katrina and the Politics of Tragedy. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, public radio's civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. Matt Miller is away today. I'm Mark Cooper, sitting in as moderator. Joining me on the left of the political spectrum is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the Los Angeles Times. On the right, from Washington, D.C., is Tony Blankley, editorial page editor of the Washington Times. Arianna Huffington is also in studio with me, representing the blogosphere, where she runs the political website, HuffingtonPost.com. Well, as we go to air on Friday, National Guard troops and aid convoys are finally reaching New Orleans, but only after 5 days of nightmarish scenes of tens of thousands of homeless Americans turned into refugees without food, water, or medical attention, all creating a general perception that the Bush administration botched and bungled its early response to this catastrophe. I can imagine what Bob and Arianna are going to say about this, and we'll hear from them in a moment. But let me go first to Tony Blankley and give him a chance for a peremptory defense of the White House, FEMA, and the Department of Homeland Security. Tony?
Well, my lead editorial in the Washington Times that I published this morning was a fairly sharp criticism of President Bush's personal leadership in the opening days of this event. I don't think that there's any way of getting around that fact. I suspect, although we haven't commented on it yet, that we'll find leadership failings at the state and local level in Louisiana, but I'm less aware of what their capacities were. Having said that, I think the two greatest dangers we face, one political, which is the partisanizing of the analysis of the problem while we're still in the emergency stage. Certainly after the fact, politics ought to assess responsibilities and make judgments. But the biggest danger we face is one that hasn't yet been mentioned, which is that the port of southern Louisiana, basically the New Orleans port, which is the largest in the nation, is probably going to be out of action, not because it's not its facilities are damaged, but because there would be no population to work it. Mm. This is a big economic threat to the country. Both the exports coming out of the Midwest, down the Mississippi, and the imports coming in are critical. That's why the Germans during World War II had U-boats outside that harbor trying to cut it off. And during the Cold War, New Orleans was judged to be the first target of the Soviet Union because they understood the importance of that port. So the great issue that we'll be facing in the coming weeks and months is how to get that port operating when there is no population available to service it.
Tony, we'll get to more of the economic impact in a moment. Arianna, let's stay on the politics for a while. Is Tony right? Is there a danger or can there be a danger of politicizing this too much? Or is it open season even 4 or 5 days after the disaster?
I think it is neither open season nor a danger of politicizing it. I think this is an incredibly important moment for us to realize that what's happening in New Orleans and in Mississippi and in Alabama right now is the culmination of years of neglect. Neglect of poverty, neglect of the environment, neglect of the public health infrastructure, and diverting the resources to where the Bush administration thought the resources should go, whether it was a blank check to Iraq or tax cuts for the richest Americans. These are incredibly important issues, and this is the moment for the country finally to pay attention. And we should not be wasting a second. This is not in any way diverting attention from helping people in the areas where they need water or medical supplies or anything like that. But if we don't use this moment, and that's why I'm really upset this morning at President Clinton for providing cover for George Bush. I mean, the last person you should have seen yesterday in the White House standing next to the to the president is Bill Clinton. And to watch him on CNN, I truly could not believe my ears yesterday when I watched him on CNN. I'm reading from the transcript. When they asked him whether he believed if the federal response was fast enough, and he said, "You and I are not in a position to make any judgment because we weren't there." And to say, "I'm telling you, nobody thought this was going to happen." It is unbelievable. And you know what? The reason why I'm focusing on this is because it's time for Democrats to stop defending him and to stop pretending that this is just a Republican problem.
Bob, sure, that sounds like your cue. Would you rather attack President Bush or Both. President Clinton on this one? Or neither.
I'm dumbfounded that somehow Bill Clinton became the...
Are you going to defend what he said?
That's not the issue. But
it is the issue. It is one of the issues.
Fine. It isn't. I'm sorry. Don't interrupt now to say it again, because Bill Clinton, first of all, in terms of the response to this disaster, it's hardly Bill Clinton's watch. I know we're used to blaming him for everything, but he's not responsible for this, nor is he in any prime way responsible for the failure to do the infrastructure changes that were required before, although I will say that if you want to make a nonpartisan comment, I'll take it to California, where we had a very good example of two kinds of Democrats. We had Pat Brown, who did a lot for the infrastructure. He put the gold in the Golden State. And whether it was flood control or whether it's the wetland, whether it was the universities building the highways, Pat Brown was the kind of Democrat that actually Ronald Reagan used to celebrate at one point. Then Ronald Reagan came in and did what was called the Reagan Revolution, and Pat Brown's son, Jerry, then continued with this dismantling of what is absolutely necessary to the preservation of civilized society. Whatever any civilized society has been able to control flooding, any civilized society has known you need government to provide an infrastructure. You will have chaos, you will have anarchy, you will have madness, as we've seen in New Orleans. And what was the failure? You could have built a Category 5 system on the levees for $2.5 billion.
Bob, but
they didn't want to do it. You know why? Because they have that deregulation religion down there, which has become the religion of the Republican Party nationally. And on your right, there are plenty of Democrats who seem to support it, that, you know, let's just have laissez-faire. Well, laissez-faire doesn't work, and we've seen it now in New Orleans, and we've seen it in Biloxi.
Ariana, your quick comment,
yeah,
and then we'll go back to Tony.
Just a very quick comment, because it's what I'm saying is really important at the moment, because we can all sit here and agree that the fundamental responsibility rests with the administration. The fact that we didn't have the National Guard we needed there, the fact that the resources had not been spent to build the infrastructure. But the fact that the loyal opposition had not been saying that all these years is very significant, because we would not be where we are if the Democrats had provided the leadership. And if we don't look at both these things at the same time right now, since we're not willing to do it before, nothing very much is going to change. You had Senator Landrieu yesterday on television congratulating the president and thanking him. And thank God for Anderson Cooper. He's one of the heroes of this, for taking her on and expressing some real anger and frustration. It's perfectly legitimate at a time like that to be angry.
Tony Blankley, let me come back to you. This disaster could be seen as the first real test of this new behemoth Department of Homeland Security. Has it reacted in a way that is really creating the perception that we are safer now than we were before, if this is the way some sort of catastrophe is handled?
Well, we're not worrying about perception. The reality is, and it's a big fact.
But politics is about perception, right?
And our national security is about reality, and the system obviously failed. Now, I'm aware of studies being done regarding evacuations of Washington, D.C. and other cities for terrorist alerts. And one of the great disputes that's going on, and we saw the evidence of the problem in this, is the absolute lack of a clear chain of command between not only the federal, state, and local, but within the federal, between FEMA and the military. The fact is that for almost all big operations, it's the Pentagon that's going to provide the heavy lift. But because of various traditions and laws in this country, the Pentagon always is assigned to only assist the civilian branch. So you've got the people who have the primary responsibility to do the actual action not having overall responsibility. This is a huge debate going on right now within the Pentagon regarding Northern Command and FEMA for the exact same kind of problem that we're watching on television today. So there are fundamental structural problems with how Homeland Security and beyond that the Pentagon and our whole government is preparing to deal with protecting our cities from terrorist attacks. This is a I don't want to say a wonderful, it's a horrible learning experience, and I know that it's going to have reverberations through the policy work.
Right. Bob, I wanted to ask you, is there going to be a long-term political cost to this? Are people going to make the link between what's happened in New Orleans over the last few days and what could happen in the case of a terrorist attack and conclude that there's no confidence in the DHS, for example?
Look, first of all, I don't know why we're focusing on terrorist attacks when what this shows is national security involves something more than singling out an enemy and saying it's going to appear in this way and that, and this whole hysteria that was developed by Bush and why we're in Iraq, and we're not going to revisit that, but the fact is National Guard people from Louisiana and Mississippi are in Iraq, and the Cato Institute, not a wild liberal think tank, tells us that they weren't able to do their job, which is, after all, if we're going to have a military and we're going to conquer the world, you might as well, you're going to have a draft, and you're going to have to pay the cost of it. And this idea of bleeding the National Guard and taking them away from doing their homeland function of being able to keep the streets safe and respond to crises like this shows, you know, a very narrow definition of national security. And clearly, wasting money and not spending money on rebuilding your levees and preserving your wetland and dealing with global warming and all of these issues has a lot to do with national security. On the specific case of FEMA, FEMA has been destroyed by this administration. FEMA has been subsumed into this great anti-terrorist thing. We forgot what FEMA was supposed to do. We forgot that there is a function. And let me say this, which the world, it won't go away because the world has seen us as a third world country in our response. I mean, dictators in Timbuktu, you know, tin horn dictators respond better. And it's not a New Orleans problem alone. There are other cities that have major lapses in their infrastructure. We've been warning about dams. We've been warning about, you know, crumbling highways. We've been warning about all kinds of failures in our infrastructure in other places. And the whole philosophy has always been, you know, oh, it'll all be done by the private sector. Well, garbage. The private sector cannot provide infrastructure. It is absolute. This is an ideological obsession that has come to dominate the country. And what we've seen here is the true cost. Instead of spending $2.5 billion to build the right kind of levee system, you're now going to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to try to bring back an American city.
Let me get Ariana in before we break for a moment. Ariana, is there a long-term political cost? You seem to suggest that if the Democrats don't increase their criticism of the Bush administration, that the administration is not going to pay the political cost that you think it should pay.
That's exactly what I'm saying, and that's what I'm afraid of. I mean, there are some positive signs. My phone has been ringing off the hook by friends of mine who have been major supporters of Clinton and the Democrats, who are really appalled by this standing by his side at this moment when the nation can actually be allowed to see him standing alone, being responsible for this, being responsible on multiple levels. I mean, we cannot really consider the responsibility just by the level of response. That is really way too minuscule compared with the fact that the absence of the National Guard, the absence of the funding had so much to do with the war in Iraq. This is the time to connect the dots. This is what they call a teachable moment, but you got to have some teachers and what they used to call village explainers.
Well, we'll come back to some more explaining about natural disasters and political catastrophes when we return. But first, you're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Welcome back to Left, Right, and Center. I'm Mark Cooper, sitting in as moderator for Matt Miller. Robert Scheer and Ariana Huffington are in the studio with me, and Tony Blankley is in Washington, D.C. Tony, let's just continue this last thread. Are you worried, as a supporter of the administration, of long-term or mid-term political costs, be they rightly or wrongly assigned?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I am. I mean, I'm a partisan. I worked for Reagan and Newt Gingrich, and but I this may sound implausible, but I really care less about the success of the Bush presidency than the success of the country over the next 3.5 years. Although I also would like to see Bush do well, and the politics of it is going to be hard to figure out. Ariana does make a point that if the opposition won't oppose, it's hard to exploit the shortcomings of a government. I would like to go to a couple of other things that were mentioned, because on the question of they could have built a proper dike for $2.5 billion, and I don't contest that, but I heard a long interview with a former mayor of New Orleans who is a Democrat, currently the head of the Urban League. I forget his name. He was in from the mid-90s until 2002, and he was talking about the levies, and he was saying, we were constantly briefed on this. We all knew that this wouldn't work for a 4 or 5 category, and that the cost was prohibitive to build a 4 or 5. So this was all during both the Clinton years and the early Bush years, that the mayor, the former mayor of New Orleans, didn't think there was a reasonable, plausible fix. And he specifically said, we didn't think it was possible to build what was necessary. So I don't know what that a couple of billion dollars would have solved the problem. As far as the National Guard is concerned, I did a little calling around yesterday to some folks in the Guard services here at the Pentagon that I know, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but my best judgment is that while there's a critical shortage of Guard overall regarding our end force strength, and I've written and talked about that, that regarding the catastrophe in New Orleans, the problem was not a lack of men and women in the Guard here in the country available, but the lack of the movement of them swiftly enough.
I'm sorry, I have to respond to that, because if they were in New Orleans, they wouldn't have to move anywhere. They would be right there, and they would know the terrain, and they would be local. The whole point of the National Guard is that it is local, that it knows the area. Now they are importing them from places where they don't know.
But Ariana,
you know what? I don't know who you talk to, but people have been speaking on the record.
Don't we have enough National Guard? In any case, I heard that we had something like 330,000 National Guard.
Well, the bottom line right now is that 118,000 members of the National Guard are in Iraq, right? That is 40% of Mississippi's National Guard and 35% of Louisiana's National Guard. We're talking about huge numbers. And when you look at what's happening there, you know that just a few dozen of them could have made a difference.
But Louisiana's National Guard had thousands of men and women, mostly men, but men and women, stationed in Louisiana who hadn't been transported to New Orleans. So the very point you make, they were there within state but weren't moved. That the problem is the organizing and prompt movement of the Guard troops, not their presence in Iraq.
Well, first of all, quickly, because I've got another question for you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. How quickly should we straighten this out? Because it's not that simple. The fact is this commander-in-chief, of course, is in charge of the National Guard. His name is George Bush, and he can move things around pretty quickly. People and equipment that wasn't even there that can deal with flooding. And National Guard people, as you know, when they're not on active duty, they're home. There are jobs and so forth. So you can't take the overall figures. And we know there was a failure to police the community. It was a failure to bring order. And the people have died as a result, and as well as the normal rescue things. Let me deal with this question of the money, which Tony has glossed over. The fact that the blogging, the information on this is just going to come pouring out. But, I mean, for instance, Lakshmi Chaudhary on Alternate has a terrific account on all this. And she quotes an EPA staffer down there in New Orleans where he makes the point, forget the $2.5 billion that would have given us a class five. What we're trying to talk about now, that would have been gold-plated. Let's just take the levy that broke. Okay, the failure was in a spot, and I'm quoting from the CPA person on Alternate. The failure was in a spot that had just been rebuilt, not yet compacted, not planted, and not armed, hardened with rock and concrete. The project should have been done 2 years ago, but the federal government diverted 80% of the funding to Iraq. Other areas had settled by a few feet from their design specs, and the money to repair them was diverted to Iraq. Okay, then this bill points out, but the Corps has had massive budget cuts across all departments, the Army Corps, including wetland regulatory since Bush took office. And this is all, hopefully, even with a Republican-dominated Senate, we're going to find out that, yes, this problem should have been solved 20 years ago, 15 years ago, but in the Bush administration and on this wetlands restoration, Bush's father made a policy that we would not lose any more wetlands. That was his policy. George W. reversed that policy, and as a result, this flooding problem was intensified. There's a mathematical formula. For every amount of wetland used, you lose a certain amount of flood control. And yes, $2.5 billion, by the way, not a large amount in terms of what we're spending in Iraq, would have given us, say, the gold-plated Category 5. But even doing the necessary repairs to the dikes right now in New Orleans, that funding was cut, and it was cut because it was said it was more important to go to war in Iraq, and which, by the way, has nothing to do with the war in Iraq.
Let me shift gears a little bit and ask you folks about the way the media handled this. One of the most interesting pieces that I saw in reaction to the early phase of this catastrophe came from Jack Schaefer at Slate.com. He called out the media for at least initially overlooking the race and class aspects of this hurricane. It was like a 900-pound polka-dotted elephant in the living room that nobody mentioned, that this is one of the poorest parts of our country and one that is predominantly African-American. And yet, I heard Rush Limbaugh this morning saying he couldn't understand why those 100,000 people who didn't have a car just didn't have a car to leave. Tony, is the media responsible for overlooking this aspect?
I didn't think Rush was on today, but maybe he said it yesterday.
Yesterday.
Michael Savage, interestingly, I heard him a few days ago raise the race issue before it was raised on Slate. Of course, look, I mean, as the article in Slate said, every on-air person is terrified of ending their career by saying the wrong thing. The Slate article referred to the Al Campanis example. And so there's a tendency for people simply not to talk about it for fear of ruining their career. Because when you're talking on the air and going back and forth, you put a clause out there that you didn't think through in the way you express it, and then you end up ending your career. So there's a reason why that's one of the reasons why it's not talked about. One of the other reasons, Matt Lauer on NBC, I didn't see it, but I was told this morning, said that he was surprised to see how many poor people there were in America, which was sort of, I mean, even for me, a country club Republican, this was sort of a stunning statement about what limousine liberals see of the world.
Ariana, do you think the response would have been different if this had been not such an impoverished place? Or do you think, or is your view that the competence is generalized?
No, well, first of all, I think what Tony said is incredibly important. I think people are stunned by the amount of poverty in America when they see it. They are stunned. And that's why I keep referring to it as a teachable moment, because now people are seeing scenes which are, of course, particularly horrific because of what happened, but there are many scenes in America which are horrific if actually we took time to look at them. And, you know, it's amazing that once again it's the Congressional Black Caucus coming and using the appropriate emotion and language. I mean, there was this press conference at the National Press Club Friday morning, and I have some quotes from Congressman Elijah Cummings, which are truly amazing. I mean, just to read you one of them. He said, "We cannot allow it to be said that the difference between those who lived and those who died in this great storm and flood of 2005 was nothing more than poverty, age, or skin color." And once again, you know, the use of biblical language, a lot of bloggers, African-American bloggers on our side, whether it's Van Jones, who is a young man in his 30s, or Randall Robinson, one of the major civil rights leaders, are using that language and that amount of outrage, which is absolutely appropriate and which is missing from so many Democratic white politicians.
Bob?
Yeah, let's not miss the point here. First of all, there's a danger in blaming the victim. Why didn't people move? The fact is, if you have an evacuation, people move, and you supply the buses, and you supply the means to move. And if the President of the United States had acted in a proper way, people would have moved. That's what you do. You evacuate a city. And so, and certainly, since we've been preparing for catastrophes, and we search everybody going anywhere near airports and so forth, we have that ability to empty a city if we feel it's necessary. They felt it was necessary, and yet these clearly were disposable people. People didn't think it was terribly important to get them out of there. And we don't even think it's important to get them out of the Superdome now, because they've been sitting there and they've been, you know, attacked and beaten, and they don't have food and they don't have water. And these idiots in Washington, I know I'm not supposed to get exercised. I know this is NPR. I know I'm supposed to be very reasonable. I'm trying my best. But it is absolutely outrageous that we have this scene that we would see in the most desolate, if we would be shocked if we saw it in the most desolate third world country, and we see our fellow citizens there stuck in the most, these abysmal situations in this idiot president was going to extend his vacation. So that's something I think has to be. We also point out on this poverty thing. We have this phony red state, blue state thing. The fact is, the red state thing has been a way of appealing primarily to whites in southern states to ignore the needs of black and poorer people. Okay, and that's what's the reality here. So we don't think there are a lot of poor people because we have this image of the South somehow the new South and it's doing wonderfully. Well, the new South's the old South plus air conditioning. Okay, the fact of the matter is there's a great deal of poverty. And just this last week, the Census Department came out with the figure that 1.1 million people more are in the below the poverty line, and it has increased every single year of the Bush administration. The poverty rate has increased for the last 4 years, and that somehow has not even been an important news.
Tony, let me just make one point. The mayor, traditionally a mayor, the regional government, and the state government have the primary responsibilities for evacuation. You have a black Democratic mayor of New Orleans. I assume he was not racist in not getting everybody out. The reason why people got out is because of the same reason we don't have an evacuation plan in D.C. or New York or Los Angeles, is because it's very hard to design. The poor people down there, when they're told to leave and they don't have a car and they don't have money for a hotel room, have a tough decision. When middle-class folks like us, if we're told to evacuate, we go to a Hyatt hotel, we check in, we give them a piece of plastic, we go up to the 18th floor and order room service. That's not available for poor people, and if they have their choices to be homeless in their hometown or homeless in a foreign town, it makes logic for them to stay in their hometown.
Tony, I want to leave time for our end-of-show rants, but take 20 seconds and tell us, give us your, as you call it, country club Republican view of why the administration bungled this. What happened? But do it in 20 seconds.
My sense is that the bureaucracy was never and the plan were never designed to work as well as they hoped, and the president did not get on top of them early enough to start improvising. And the water problem, although everybody had predicted it, nonetheless, was not part of the immediate plan for how you get provisions in, so that it was my hunch is, we'll find out in the after action reports, my hunch is that his primary mistake was not getting on top of the bureaucracy earlier and forcing people to say, try this if you can't do that. So I think the system seems to be finally getting up into a functioning level this morning.
Okay.
But that's probably what will be seen to be his primary mistake.
We're coming toward the end of the show, so let me leave some time now for our famed end-of-show left, right, and center rant with pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Bob, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, it's not so much as a rant as singing taps or playing taps for the Reagan Revolution. That's what I think would happen now with this hurricane, that the whole idea that we don't need government, that government is the enemy, has been destroyed. And even country club Republicans who lived in Biloxi can't go home. And they know that unless the U.S. government that we used to be really proud of, that can bring freedom and prosperity and enlightenment to the whole world, can bring some to New Orleans and build a proper levee, we are in big trouble as a society.
Ariana Huffington, 20 seconds for your rant.
Well, what this tragedy shows once again is that ultimately governing and leadership are about setting priorities. And this administration has been setting the wrong priorities for years. And now, in the most tragic way, the chickens are coming home to roost. And thousands of people are paying a heavy price for their leaders who have abandoned them.
Tony Blankley?
Well, I agree with Ariana that leadership is about setting priorities, and I think that much beyond the Bush administration, that the society is in the coming years going to have to make some very stark choices, because the costs of both defending ourselves in the war on terror and all the other expenses we've been talking about, all this infrastructure, is not going to be consistent with the current proportions of money we spend on a lot of programs, including perhaps health care. So we have huge decisions to make and priorities, not just as government, but more importantly as a people.
That's all the rants we've got time for today. Thanks, as always, to Tony Blankley, Robert Scheer, and Ariana Huffington for letting me sit in today. Matt Miller returns next week. We had help today from WAMU in Washington. Our technical director is Ray Guarna, with an assist from engineer David Green. Sarah Spitz produces this program. I'm Mark Cooper. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another lively edition of Left, Right, and Center.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we
know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.